For 36 years, the Goldman Environmental Prize has celebrated everyday heroes who are showing us that every action has the power to turn apathy into positive change for the environment. Heroes like Bastiana Gurri and Olsi Nika, who helped create Europe's first Wild River National Park. Visit us at goldmanprize.org to discover the stories of this year's Goldman Environmental Prize winners. And learn how when it comes to protecting our planet, the doing makes the difference.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Signature Select Classic Ham, shank half or whole, bone in while supplies last, just 89 cents per pound. Enjoy 1 pound strawberries or 6 ounce blueberries, raspberries, or blackberries. Buy two, get two free of equal or lesser value when you buy four. And mix and match Nabisco snack crackers, Ritz crackers, Cheetos, Doritos, Tostitos, or Sun Chips, selected varieties and sizes. Buy two, get two for free when you buy four. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
From KMOX Sports, this is the Graybar Sports on a Sunday morning. Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs. Now, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here is Tom Ackerman.
Happy Easter from our family to yours. Hope you're having a wonderful morning wherever you are. Sports on a Sunday morning coming to you on this Easter morning from downtown St. Louis, where it is wet, but it looks like we are out of the woods on rain here for a little bit. Great to spend some time with you, no doubt about it, and hope you are surrounded by loved ones. If you are celebrating Easter today, if you're heading out to your service or Mass, I'm glad you're taking us along with you, and we'll catch you afterwards. We'll be here until 11:45 when pregame takes over. That'll be Joe Pott's turn for the Cardinals and the New York Mets. Cardinals need to figure out how to get the runs going again. Yesterday, they just could not score any runs. Real trouble against a New York team that was susceptible to getting knocked off. I mean, Matthew Liberatore pitched a good game. Cardinals aren't able to get both things going at once. And then there's the Blues. I mean, the Blues game, as entertaining as it was, it's frustrating too, because you had the number one team in the league on the ropes, you thought, and then, of course, they come back and play this amazing third period where the ice is tilted and the Blues just can't possess the puck. They are in their own zone forever, over and over and over again. That was a tough one to take yesterday. Blues were up 3-2 in the second period. They were up 3-2 at the start of the third period, and then they just had the life taken out of them by this Winnipeg team that is awfully good. I mean, they really, really are. Connor Hellebuyck only faced 17 shots on the day. That's a lack of offense on the Blues' part. I mean, they got their goals, and we saw them. I mean, a power play goal from Robert Thomas. That's terrific. They got a goal out of Oscar Sundquist after two quick goals by Winnipeg. I thought the goal by Sonny was a monster goal at the end of the first period. It has you feeling good going into the second period, and the Blues took advantage right away. Minute 13 in, Kyrou scores on the power play, and it's 3-2 St. Louis. But that's when Winnipeg just locked it down. The rest of the second period and all of the third period, no goals for the Blues, very little to show for it, and they end up losing this game by a final of 5-3. Winnipeg scores three goals in the third period. One of them's an empty netter. Kyle Connor with the game winner with a minute 36 to go. Mark Scheifele got the scoring going with a power play in the first period, a power play goal. And that's part of the issue here, too, is that the Blues were just undisciplined here. That was set up by a Jake Neighbors slashing penalty. You can't let that happen. Jake Neighbors is a great player. And you have to be intense. Like, you want Jake Neighbors to be intense. This is his time. He's a young guy. He's going to be in a lot of playoff series in his life. But you also have to be disciplined, and hopefully he will learn from that. You can't be called for a slashing penalty and put a team like that on the power play, especially when you're up 1-0, but at any time. And the Jets took advantage of it. And then Zach Bolduc, you know, in the third period at the 4:05 mark, he cross-checks when the whistle was blown. This this was it. Now, it didn't result in an immediate goal, but it puts you, again, in a shorthanded situation and doesn't give you an opportunity to score. You have to go into defense mode again. So over and over, this happened to the Blues. Those two stand out. But, you know, you have to be able to be disciplined in this game, and those two were tough ones for the Blues to take. There was a bunch of extracurricular activity at the end of the game, misconducts handed out left and right. We'll see. I think these two teams will play what I hope to be a long series. I did not expect this to be a quick series by any means. I would have been very surprised had the Blues won the first game, but I thought they had a shot at it. They end up losing this game. And now they're down 0-1. They come right back at them tomorrow, and who knows? Maybe they learn from those things, and perhaps they have some confidence that when they get on the power play, they can score. When they're 5-on-5, they've got to figure out how to get the puck in their possession so that they can score. The Blues have scorers. They're going to really miss Dylan Holloway, but it's not the end of the world. Robert Thomas is dealing with a lower body injury. You could see that affecting him a little bit yesterday after he got off to a great start. He can only take so many hits. The Blues are a hot, hot team right now. Even though they lost those three in a row, they finished strong against Utah. They played pretty well last night. It just worked against them late where they started to run out of gas, whatever the case may be. Winnipeg just flattening them with a great, great possession of the puck. We're going to hear from Coach Jim Montgomery, Jordan Binnington, and much more at 10:30 on that note. And Bernie Miklas coming up here in about 5 minutes or so. And then the Cardinals, you know, again, just not able to score when they needed to. They walk five times. Somebody's got to score there. Five walks, and they end up losing the game 3-0. That's a waste of a good pitching performance by Matthew Liberatore. Day before, Miles Michaelis can't get through five. He starts out great. They pull him. That taxes the bullpen, and the Cardinals were not able to capitalize there either. They lost that game. Day before, lost the game with lack of offense. So, you know, the tough one in the Michaelis game was how you had Brendan Donovan hit that home run to tie the game, and then Lindor walks off Fernandez. You just, you know, you're running out of arms at that point, I guess. That one hurt. That one really hurt. Yesterday didn't hurt as much as the one before. That Friday one hurt, I thought, because you had him. You had him. And then City with the scoreless draw, fine. Still unable to score, but fine. They do what they do defensively, and then the Battlehawks lost. I mean, gee whiz, Drew, what the heck is going on here? All four teams played yesterday. Can't get a win out of them. Battlehawks lost 30-15 to Arlington. It's sports. It's not the end of the world. There's a lot of sports still to come. These seasons aren't over by any stretch for any of the four. But we'll hear all about it. Mizzou Gymnastics, third in the championship, the best women's sport in the school's history in terms of postseason performance. Nobody has ever done it better in any sport at the University of Missouri than the gymnastics team did yesterday in Fort Worth, Texas. So congratulations to them, and we will highlight them. It's Easter morning, sports on a Sunday morning from the Stiefel Sports Studio. I'm Tom Ackerman. Bernie Miklas joins me after the break, and we will break some things down with him. Then we do a Blues breakdown at 10:30. Curtis Francois from Worldwide Technology Raceway at 10:45. At 11:05, some sports headlines. We'll take a whip around the country and tell you everything that's going on. 11:15, Lutz Fan and Steel, sporting director for City. 11:30, John Moselock on this Easter Sunday will be joining us, leading into Cardinals pregame at 11:45. I'm Tom Ackerman. This is Sports on a Sunday Morning from the Stiefel Sports Studio.
Back to the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning on 104.1 KMOX. From the Stiefel Financial Sports Studio, here is Tom Ackerman.
Great to be with Bernie Miklas. Our visits with him, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, an American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer. Bernie, happy Easter to you and your family.
Well, same to you, Tom, and Angie, and those, I'm going to call them kids, because the last time I saw your daughters, they were, in fact, kids. So, well, they'll always be kids.
Yeah.
Happy Easter to everybody at the Ackermans.
Appreciate it. Yeah, our girls were up this morning, and still got those Easter baskets, ages 18 and 14. They had a great, great morning. Lots of chocolate was handed out. We let the dogs go into another room just in case the chocolate, you know, hits the floor. We don't want that.
Yeah, I got you.
We don't want that. But the boys got their own treats. They're doing well as well. Appreciate you, man. Yesterday was a tough one for those Blues fans because it was so tantalizing. I mean, they come out, they're hitting everything that moves. And that also means that Winnipeg was possessing the puck a lot. We'll get to that in a minute. But they're hitting and they're hitting and it just it's exciting. And they take the lead and Kyrou's got the goal. And then Winnipeg just did their thing. And the Blues have some learning to do, I think, when it comes to how to conduct yourself in the playoffs.
It was there for the taking, as they say. Well, what a wonderful opportunity. They're up 3-2. You could tell that Winnipeg's feeling the pressure. You know, their goaltender was feeling the pressure. And he's had a recent history of some pretty bad breakdowns in the postseason. Hellebuck, who, even though he's exceptional regular season goaltender. And then I thought at one turning point was, and not to put it on him because Hellebuck is a great goaltender, but, you know, Jordan Kyrou had a chance to give the Blues a 4-2 lead on the breakaway. And Kyrou Hellebuck made an excellent save. And then after that, he settled down. And then I think Winnipeg kind of exhaled and got into their game. And that led to the third period. The Blues hardly had any possession. They hardly had any shots. They had hardly any scoring chances. And, Winnipeg totally dominated that third period. I mean, just totally dominated. I mean, credit to them because they've been shaky in the postseason as good as they are. They've been really shaky. And they pulled themselves together and they put the hammer down and the Blues had no response in the third period. And, of course, as you mentioned, the young guys, we saw, unfortunately, some pretty dumb penalties. And Neighbors and Bull Duke, they know this and they're going to learn from it. But I thought the Blues did enough really good things to where, you know, I'm not going to overreact and say, well, they had their chance. That's it. It's over. No, because Winnipeg, there's still some underlying vulnerability there. But obviously the Blues got to go get game two.
Yes, they do. And yeah, I mean, it's intense, that building. And look, I can see Enterprise Center. If I lean a little bit this way, I can look out the window here downtown and see Enterprise Center. Enterprise Center is going to be rocking on Thursday night. I mean, that's an 8:30 announced start time. It'll be more like 9:00. That crowd will be as lubricated a hockey crowd as you ever heard. I mean, whether it's 0-2 or 1-1, but if it is 1-1, look out. I don't see the Blues intimidated at all by the Jets or the crowd or anything. But that whole thing can get you amped up and make you do dumb stuff, can it?
Yeah, it can. And, you know, I have I think I'm in the minority here. And believe me, I'm not looking for anything to be negative about. I mean, because we all highlighted what the Blues did wrong or what didn't go right for them. But I don't know whether I was reading Jeremy Rutherford or someone else, but you know, a lot of people are making a huge deal about how much the Blues out-hit Winnipeg. And by the way, I think that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing. But when, as the writer quoted Ken Hitchcock once said, he said, you know, Hitchcock was never worked up about how many hits you put on the other team. Because he'd say, you know, when you're hitting somebody, it also means you're away from the puck. So I think that if this series goes 7 games, or even gets to a 6th game, I think if the Blues have been out hitting them over and over and over again, I think, yeah, there's a chance it could catch up, and it's a chance it could lower some of the resolve on the Jets side. So we'll see. But, you know, hitting for the sake of hitting, it's also got to be relatively smart. But you hope you can wear them down over a long series. But if you don't have a long series, it's not going to matter.
Does this Blues team have the type of team that they had in 2019? That team, man, they were heavy and they just beat the crap out of you. I mean, I'm not sure that this is that team, that they have a lot more speed even than that team had, I feel like.
They do.
Even without Dylan Holloway.
They do. And the one thing, the similarities with these two teams is the 2019 and 25 Blues is they're both exceptional at 5-on-5 hockey, which is where your foundation is. Very, very strong. The Blues were one of the best once Berube took over. They were the best 5-on-5 team in the NHL. And the same thing happened with Montgomery since he took over. Berube was an excellent coach for that team. You know, Montgomery's an excellent coach for this team. And although they don't have a Pietrangelo, you know, this defensive core, I think, is pretty deep. I think the depth overall is pretty good. But, you know, you mentioned it at the beginning. There's a lot relative to the 2019 team. There's a lot of inexperience on this team as well. And so you know, how much will the younger guys learn from you know, game one? I think they'll learn a lot because we respect the heck out of them as far as their approach, their maturity, their competitiveness. And, you know, Bennington's got to be the Bennington. And I thought Bennington was fine yesterday. I can't really fuss over anything he did. His teammates just abandoned him, basically, in the third period. But, you know, that Bennington and this Bennington, the 2025 Bennington is going to have to steal games the way the 2019 Bennington did. So there's some other things, too. You know, I think that fourth line in 2019 was just absolutely amazing. I think this fourth line's good, but it's not to the level of what we saw in 2019. And I think not having Holloway really hurts, though nobody wants to make excuses this year. But he was a great, great blue after Montgomery took over.
Sure was. You know, I don't love that Heilbuck only had to make 14 saves and get a win, that he only had right. 17 shots. But I will use some reverse psychology there and say maybe you got in his head a little bit because you scored three times. And also, you know, if Winnipeg's going to be possessing the puck this much, and I don't see a complete reversal of that in game two, you might see a little bit more of that. Maybe he is a little cold. You know, perhaps you could take advantage of the fact that he's not getting warmed up. He's not seeing a lot of shots. I'm just thinking out loud here. Perhaps you might be able to catch him off guard, but you got to get the puck to the net.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up because that was a huge part of the game, the fact that they didn't make him work all that hard, especially after they had the lead. I mean, the start was fantastic. No one could complain about that. But, you know, this is a guy, and again, he was the best goaltender in the NHL this season, you know, and been maybe one of the top two or three regular season goalies in this league for, you know, several years now. However, you know, it's like the Tony La Russa thing, you know, with baseball. It's like, hey, man, you got to separate regular season from postseason. It's two different things. You know, it's postseason pressure's on because one game goes wrong and it changes the whole series. It's not like that during the regular season. And, you know, coming into this series with the Blues, Hellebuck had his record as a goaltender in his last 28 games, postseason games, was 9-19. And he also, you know, the past two seasons, the previous two seasons, you know, they got bounced out in five games both times. And his save percentage is well below 900. So he has been vulnerable in the postseason. That's a fact. That's not an opinion. And they've had a lot of early exits. And that core group is still there. I think maybe they're more seasoned now, more grizzled, so to speak. But it's still the same core group that has kind of spit it up in the postseason many, many times. And so that's what the Blues have to do. They have to put the pressure on them. The pressure on them in terms of the forecheck, keeping the puck in the offensive zone, peppering Hellebuck with shots. They have to get that pressure going. But they also have to get the psychological pressure put on that team, where that team's like, uh-oh, you know, oh, boy, you know, reminds them of their recent postseason failures. And I thought that was happening yesterday. It was happening up until the time where the Blues just kind of let their foot off the accelerator.
I agree. You know, if you put 17 shots on them, this is what I would say anyway. I'd say, look, we put 17 shots on these guys and we darn near won the game. I mean, let's go right here. Let's put some pressure right on this goaltender. We got a long way to go. Let's get back home in a 1-1 series and let that place light up, and it's going to be a blast. But the game is tomorrow night in Winnipeg, 6:30 start. I don't see the Blues scared whatsoever. It should be a really fun game. Look, let's spend the last 4 or 5 minutes here on the Cardinals. I'm not sure what to make of this. I was asked this morning by Scott Jagow. I don't have an answer. The Blues are 8-4 at home, and they're 1-8 on the road. Why are they so poor on the road? Is it because of the competition? Is it because they're putting pressure on themselves offensively? I don't know what it is.
Well, their first road series at Boston, you know, obviously they lost all three games, but they hit really well. They had a great offensive series, and their starting pitching was really bad. But since then, if you look at their last 12 games, that, of course, goes through yesterday, they're only averaging 3.1 runs per game. And they've scored two runs or fewer six out of the 12 games. They're hitting .230 overall, and you know, very few home runs and very few extra base hits. And over the last 12 games since they left Boston, they're hitting .214 with runners in scoring position. Now, that's the bad thing. The offense has dried up, and we're seeing some guys that were doing really well starting to kind of struggle, and you know, things are going the wrong way as a team and also for individuals offensively. But the good thing to take out of it, if we're going to evaluate the Cardinals over these last 12 games, I think we got to evaluate them all the way around. The starting pitching over these last 12 games has been simply outstanding. A 2.42 ERA. And Miles Michaelis has a 4.66 ERA during this time, but all the other guys, their ERAs are exceptional. And Libitor has been exceptional. And Palante's pitched great. Matt's pitch had a great start. Sonny Gray was great. Fetty, his last two starts, one run in 13 innings. Gray, one run in 12 innings. So it's sort of the reversal of what we saw in Boston, you know, where, you know, the Cardinals pitching just got destroyed, but their hitters were up for the fight. But since then, it's the other way around. Their starting pitching has been outstanding, and the hitters have just – things have just fallen apart here lately. And the bullpen, let's face it, and I'm not trying to sound like Mr. Know-It-All, and I apologize if I do, but I kept saying before the season, look, that bullpen last year is the reason why the Cardinals were able to finish with a winning record. It was that was one of the best bullpens any Cardinal team any decade has ever had. And I just said, look, it's just not – you can't expect them to repeat that. You just simply can't expect them to be that good again. They can be good, but they're not going to be that invincible. And unfortunately, so far, that's the case.
I'm sorry, I couldn't get my mic turned on. Samuel was asking, no Bernie Cam this morning. Well, we don't do the Bernie Cam on sports on a Sunday morning. That's a Gas House Gang thing only, I do believe. But – you know, the Gas House Gang brings to mind, we're going to have a good week. We will have Ollie Marmol on again on Tuesday. Do you see my X account? Again, I shouldn't judge based on what I see there, but it lit up Ollie Marmol. I mean, do you see any fault towards Marmol over the weekend? I guess in particular the walk-off Lindor game.
Well, I got mixed feelings on it. And I know in sports talk radio, we're not supposed to have mixed feelings. We got to have a hot take. I get it. Because, first of all, I winced when I heard Ollie say, well, there's no manager ever, you know, would bring his closer in a tie game on the road. And I had really, really unfortunate flashbacks to when the Cardinals got eliminated by the Giants in the 2014 NLCS, and the final three games were really close, and Trevor Rosenthal, who had a massive season that year, he never appeared in a game. And I asked Matheny about it after they got eliminated, and I said, listen, you know, Rosenthal was ready, and you chose to bring in Waka, and I don't know, would you do that all over again? You know, would you bring in Rosenthal? And he just looked at me with just total disdain and said, like, nope, you never bring your closer in a tie game. You know, late. And here's my point. This is why I say I have mixed feelings. You can't have that as a policy where you never, ever, 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 ever deviate from it. All situations are different. And when you've got the very best hitters in the Mets lineups coming up, 1, 2, 3 in order, first great hitter, second great hitter, third great hitter. I think you send Helsley out there to take on their best. And then, yeah, after that, you're going to have to hold your breath about what happens after that if he gets you through the ninth. It wasn't an easy decision. But I do think that, you know, with the exceptional quality of the hitters that were coming up, I want my best guy to keep the game alive rather than, put a vulnerable guy in there who's much more likely to have a bad inning and have a sudden death loss, right?
Yeah,
it's a tough question. Anybody who says it's all or nothing, there's no gray area. Well, that's kind of what's wrong with the way things are today. You know, it's either all or nothing. You know, there's no middle ground to have a good discussion about it. But I just don't like it as a policy.
I don't either. It's fair to question, I guess, if Helsley's okay. I mean, they haven't said otherwise. But you know, we haven't seen him since Wednesday, when he closed out that game. I'm assuming he's fine, but perhaps there's something that we don't know. I always have to leave that out there too. Maybe they want to rest Helsley a little bit more than they normally do. I don't know.
Right. And I think you need to take into account like who's coming up for the other team, you know, and the Mets are great at home. And the, you know, those guys love that environment, and Citi Field is on fire these days. I mean, nothing's like the old Shea Stadium in terms of having a raucous crowd, but what we're seeing with Citi Field, you know, with the way the franchise has moved up under the new ownership, those weekend games in Citi Field are they're just a circus, you know. It is like the old days, and so that's another thing. I mean, do you want to insert Fernandez into that situation, or you know, would you be better off with Helsley? I think that's sometime that's a kind of decision where you got to take the policy and put it aside and just be more pragmatic about the situation. That's just me. I've never managed a game.
No, I hear that. I felt it too. I saw it. It was like you saw it coming. You know, Fernandez right. comes in, God bless him, but here comes the top of the order, and it's just a matter of time before they get you. By the way, I picked the Mets to win the World Series, and I'm going to stay with it. Even though they were banged up to start the year, I think there's something magical going on there, to be honest with you. I think they're really good. Hopefully Sonny Gray can throw cold water on the whole thing today, but the Mets are good.
You know, and the thing about them is they have all kinds of starting pitching injuries, and they're starting pitching the ERA. I don't have it right in front of me, but it's been really, really good. And the scary thing, if you don't like the Mets, if you're a Phillies fan or a Braves fan or whatever, you know, Soto hasn't even gotten going yet. Mm-hmm. Not in terms of what he's capable of doing, you know. So, and they've had a relatively quiet lineup. So they still got a lot in them, a lot more to do in terms of just wreaking havoc on pitchers.
Sure do. My friend, we have spent a lot of time together this morning, and I appreciate the extra time. I hope you have a wonderful Easter. Say hello to Kirsten and your great family, and let's catch up tomorrow.
All right, Tom, and happy Easter to everyone listening. And I'm going to say it one more time. I haven't said it for a while. It is a privilege to be on KMOX. Thank you.
Man, thank you. And you can see him, too. He's on Sports Hub STL. He's on with Katie Wu. He's doing so many great things out there, writing. But Bernie Miklas is so true to us. We just love having him in our KMOX family. It is an absolute pleasure every single time. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll break down a little bit more of the Blues. We'll hear from Jim Montgomery. We'll hear from Jordan Bennington. And then we'll hear from Curtis Francois, the owner of Worldwide Technology Raceway, in our final segment of this hour. And a whole other hour coming with John Mozeliak at 11:30, Lutz at 11:15, sports on a Sunday morning from the Stifel Sports Studio.
From the Stifel Financial Sports Studio. Here is Tom Ackerman.
10 minutes from Curtis Francois, Worldwide Technology Raceway. Right now, let's talk hockey. Curtis likes hockey. He likes those St. Louis Blues. And that was a tough one yesterday. Going up 3-2, you got the third period ahead of you, and they just can't close the deal. Winnipeg wins it 5-3 over the Blues in game one of their Stanley Cup playoff series. Here is Blues coach Jim Montgomery.
Penalties, puck management, a little bit of our emotions.
This may be building on that, but at some point, this may be building on that. At some point, shots seem to become very hard to come by for your team. Is that something you stopped doing or something they started doing?
Probably a combination of both. I think we didn't hit the net on some of our opportunities.
Jim obviously didn't put a lot of pressure on your breakouts, but what did you do wrong? What can you do better getting the puck out?
I got to look the film over. You know, right now, I wouldn't have a real educated answer for you. I mean, both teams are forechecking. It's the playoffs. You're going to forecheck hard. I didn't think our puck management and decision-making was quick enough.
That said, when you were in your defensive zone, as the game went on, they seemed to be able to have a lot more puck control and extended control. Is there something that you could do better to, well, clearly, but this something, what could you do to kind of interrupt the momentum they were able to build in your zone as the game went on?
Our habits weren't very good tonight. Defensively, we weren't very good tonight. We'll grow. We'll get better.
Just your take on that breakaway save on Kyrou kind of late in the second, which obviously could have made it a two-goal game. Do you feel like if someone could get up to, that might have changed the look of that game?
That's a hard one to answer. You know, with the way we played in the third, I don't know if two would have been enough.
Jim, what makes Scheifele and Connor such a kind of dynamic duo as they've been for a number of years?
Skill and talent. They make plays, poised plays. I mean, that game-winning goal is a high-end play.
I don't know what you thought of the run of penalties early on in the game for both teams, but the one that sort of caught my eye was maybe the Zach Goldin cross-check there in the third. I wonder if that felt like it changed momentum a little bit for you.
You know, I don't know. I can't take that penalty in the playoffs. I do know that. I don't. I thought we killed the penalty pretty good. You know, I can't say it built momentum for them, but I know it took us from a situation where I thought we were a little bit in control, and then we weren't.
Was the PK one of the bright spots for this game?
We gave up one, so you know we got to be a little bit better on the PK. All in all, I thought it was a really good hockey game, you know. But we are going to grow, and we're going to get better from this. That's what we have to do, you know. If we want to make it a series, we're going to have to get better. We're going to have to control our emotions better. We're going to have to manage the puck better. We're going to have to win more battles.
Jim, 8 hits for Braden in the first period, and do you feel like he really helped set the tone for your group?
Braden Shen's an incredible competitor, and he's our leader. He sets the tone really well for us every night.
That's Jim Montgomery. Monty has a way of being very insightful and not using a lot of words. He can just cut right to it. I really like listening to him. Did you notice? I don't know if he distracted you, but it did for me. There was somebody asking questions that sounded just like him. Like, who was on mic there? It sounded like Monty asking Monty a question. I don't know why it did, but it did. But I thought he answered those questions really well. And I do think that game two will be incredibly competitive. At least that's my hope, that the Blues can match the Winnipeg Jets again and this time overtake them in the third period rather than let the third period get away from them. Here is Jordan Binnington, Blues goaltender. He made 21 saves.
Yeah. You know, we had the lead, and obviously they're going to press a little more, and that's just the game of hockey. But, you know, I feel like we played a hard game. A lot of good things to take away from this game for sure, and it's just back to the drawing board for the next game. It's one game at a time, and we know that. It's whether you win or lose, you got to focus on that next game. So,
is the effectiveness of the penalty kill one of those pluses to take from this game?
For sure. I think we were strong tonight on the kill and at key times also, and then the power play was good too, finding ways to execute our game plan. So, yeah.
You guys are so effective with your breakout passes and, you know, guys getting the puck out of the zone, but it didn't seem like, you know, a lot was materializing with that, especially in the third. But, you know, what could you do differently as a group to kind of help that?
I think, you know, just communicate and maybe take a look at the film here and come up with a good game plan for the next game. And, yeah, just communication and get to your spots and trust each other, I think we'll be all right.
So for the young guys on this team, is a good – a good exposure to this to get them into the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a crazy atmosphere out there. It's loud, and obviously with the whiteout is intense and could be intimidating at first, but I think we weathered the storm, came out playing well, and you know, emotions get high sometimes, and I think we'll learn to along the way just keep our composure and just play between the whistles.
You made two great saves earlier in the game on Connor. It's just tough to keep a guy like that off the board. Just what happened with his shot?
Yeah, I you know, Scheifele came around the top, and it was tough to find where he was through the traffic there. And, you know, he's good at finding those holes, and he got a good shot off. So, you know, it is what it is, and that's a life of a goaltender. You got to regroup and focus on the next one.
Yeah, it was a big-time goal there at the end. Jordan Binnington, a lot of postseason experience and some good words of advice for his teammates and for everybody watching. Here is a guy with a ton of experience as well. This is Blues captain Braden Shen.
Getting anything going?
Yeah, well, I think they obviously forechecked as well, and I think we got to be a little bit better executing our breakouts and you know, winning lines and you know, getting to our forecheck game. So, you know, give them credit. They did a good job in the third period and learn from our mistakes.
And that's exactly what they're going to try to do, learn from their mistakes. We'll take a break. Curtis Francois with us on the other side of things. Sports on a Sunday morning on KMOX. Welcome back. Sports on a Sunday morning on KMOX. I'm Tom Ackerman. Let me see if you can recognize the numbers from this race. There were 676 total passes. 254 were on track for position. 115 involved drivers in the top 10. 44 in the top 5. There were 21 lead changes and 11 drivers led in this race. That race was the Bomarito Automotive Group 500 at Worldwide Technology Raceway last year. It was an unbelievable race. Some of the best driving we've ever seen in this town or anywhere And joining us is the owner of Worldwide Technology Raceway, Curtis Francois, with us. First of all, happy Easter to you and your family.
Great to be with you, Tom. Just absolutely thrilled to be starting off the 2025 IndyCar season here and talking about that. This is the 14th year of the racetrack, the ninth year of IndyCar. We're putting up some big numbers here on the racetrack and thrilled to be looking forward to a tremendous season this year.
How about those numbers I just threw out? I mean, that was some race last year.
We set a mark there that I'm not sure we'll ever pass, but we certainly were going to be trying. There's no doubt about it. The racetrack is really coming into its own. It really has got like just the right amount of grip. It's very challenging, but when the guys are on their game, they're able to use the combination of car setup and skill to win, to pass, and do all the things that are necessary for fans to see a great race.
You've had a change. Let's get right to that. You've had a change in the schedule where your NASCAR race now is going to be the first full weekend of September, and the IndyCar race, the Bomarito Automotive Group 500, will take place on Father's Day, big Father's Day weekend. Tell us what was behind all of that.
Well, we thought it was time for a bit of a change up. There was several other IndyCar races around us in August, and we thought, you know, let's look at another date. And talking with IndyCar, it became clear that Father's Day was going to open up. And I just felt like that there was such an opportunity to bring a race on Father's Day, and that fits right with our family-friendly atmosphere that we have here at the racetrack. Most dads don't want another tie. How about a set of tickets for the IndyCar race on Father's Day? So hopefully that's exactly what happens, is families come out and enjoy the day.
How well do you draw from the state of Indiana? You will be the first oval race after the Indy 500.
We draw from Indiana, there's no doubt about it, other than, you know, our Missouri and Illinois. That would be our next highest draw for sure. So we expect to see a lot of folks making the drive over on Saturday night or on Sunday for the race.
So a bit of a battle for tickets. If you're trying to get some tickets, you probably want to jump on it right now. And, of course, it's going to be spectacular weather. We're talking about the middle of June, Father's Day weekend. But it's also one of the great spectacles in the world when you think about IndyCar. You know, the fact that you have so many eyeballs on your track, and St. Louis for that matter, is pretty exciting.
Well, that's the only place in the world on that day that you're going to see that kind of a talent associated here in the United States. I mean, that is open wheel racing at its finest. And it is just really has shown, the drivers have shown that they can do things at this racetrack they can't do at others. So it really lends itself to a tremendous visual opportunity to see the best of the best competing. And then we're adding in the Route 66 celebration aspect. We're working with the state of Illinois, and we're going to be partnering with them on a concert series there. So we're going to have three national touring acts that will be playing on the Midway. Our Midway is always family-friendly, again, where people come out and they're eating the foot-long corn dogs, or they're watching something else we're doing exciting. And certainly now they have the opportunity to have the concerts as well. So there's going to be an awful lot going on Father's Day here.
We're 2 months out. It's kind of like the kickoff to summer. So that's exciting to think about. But also, you know, this style of racing is exciting. I mean, I've told you probably a million times that I grew up a fan of IndyCar. My dad would take me to races, and I became a big fan of open wheel racing. What is it to you? Why is it so great? And the preparation, I'm sure the things that happen around the race and what they put into this is all part of that as well.
Well, first of all, I have a passion for open wheel racing because that's what I primarily did when I was racing. I actually raced an Indy Lights car here at this racetrack before I owned it. Had no idea that someday or another I would be running things. But, you know, I just like the speed and the aerodynamics and all of the different things that lend themselves to the high limits and the high speed operations that you see with the race cars. So It starts there for me. And I think, you know, this is there's a bit of a red carpet experience for the drivers. There's drivers that are international. They bring a lot of different personalities, tremendous experience from some of the drivers that have been in this the series for a while, but there's a lot of young rookies that are here. So you take a Joseph Newgarden, who seems to just have our racetrack dialed in, and then you have Pato O'Ward, you have all this whole other group of younger drivers coming into the series. And so everybody wants to win on June 15th when they're here, and that's going to make for great racing.
June 14th and 15th are the dates. The Bomarito Automotive Group 500, it's a whole weekend full of activity and different levels of racing, as you mentioned.
No doubt about it. You'll see the Indy Next Series racing, and that's the last step before you go to Indy. Those guys are really competitive. As a matter of fact, the race car driver that won the Indy Next Series last year is racing in Indy, and he's actually here today testing. And so it shows how that works. That's the farm team system that feeds IndyCar, and they're here today testing.
And one final thing here. You know, we talk about the music, the food, the wrestling, the, you know, all the bells and whistles that go around it to make it a spectacle. But I really hear this more and more, and not just IndyCar, but NASCAR as well. The drivers really like this track. Why do they like this track so much?
Well, I think it is both a car setup as well as a skill track. It's not one or the other, it's both. And so because we have a different radius and banking in turn one and two than we do in turn three and four, you really can only set your car up perfectly for one end or the other. And so you're really dependent on skill to make the car perform in the other corner that it is not set for. So that leads to great passing opportunities. And so I think that's what you see with drivers coming here and knowing that they have a really good chance to demonstrate their skill.
It's going to be some weekend, the Bomarito Automotive Group 500 IndyCar, and then you and I will get back together and talk a little bit more about the Enjoy Illinois 300, which I know you are fired up about. We're talking about NASCAR playoffs coming. First things first, but NASCAR playoffs is unbelievably exciting.
Yeah, it really is. And I think with us adding the element of the Route 66 celebration, partnering with the state, and bringing concerts, we've got Cracker, Soul Asylum, Sponge. You know, that's going to be a great atmosphere as well to add to the already this great, just lively atmosphere that the race weekend will bring. So we're really looking forward to it.
Those are three bands I listen to in college. See, you're hooking in with all the dads. You know exactly what you're doing here. We're all going to be in on that concert, having a few cold ones afterwards and before. Appreciate you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Great to be with you.
Curtis Francois with us. We'll be back in just a moment. Sports on a Sunday morning from the Stiefel Sports Studio.